You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
So, hey, we've been making this podcast for over 2.5 years.
What?
Yep, thanks to listeners like you. And from the gate, people have asked us for merchandise or additional content or even some hang time with me and Scott.
That's weird.
It is. But we think we have a solution for you.
Yep, we are excited to announce that we have a new Patreon page.
Yeah, and you know how people are patrons of the arts? Well, in this case, we're the arts.
Hmm. And by becoming a Patreon, you'll get bonus content, access to outtakes that the general public will never see, extremely cool merch, and depending on what tier you get on, a monthly hang time with Laura and I.
Yep, and it all starts at just $5 a month.
That's nothing.
Right? Not per day, not per week. It's only $5 per month.
And you're guaranteed merchandise.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So click the link in the show notes to read about the different tiers and see what great stuff you can get. Become a podcast patron. Join our Patreon today at www.patreon.com/theonlyoneintheroom.
Our team needs a little rest and vitamin D after this crazy 2021 year. We've been working really hard and we need a little break. But don't worry, we'll be back on January 4th with new episodes in season 12. In the meantime, we're going to be bringing you some of your favorite episodes from the year 2021.
Yes, we are. And yeah, these are your favorites, which is so great. We love to be able to do this. One of your favorites was Robert Cabrera, who was the only one who survived a genocide and landed on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list.
Craziest journey,
right?
Huh?
What a feat. We have Jessica Frew, who's the only one who was still in love with her gay ex-husband.
I love that story.
Yeah, that's one of our favorites, too. Wally Green, the only one who saved his life with ping pong, which is an unbelievable story.
Mm-hmm.
Chad Foster, the only one who improved his vision by losing his eyesight. I particularly like the Scott talks on this one.
Powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nick North, the only trans dad of five. So much joy. You have to listen to Nick.
I've never heard this story before.
No. Mm-mm. And then we're going to do, Scott and I, because you've asked for it, a holiday special where we talk about the year and wrap it up and probably talk some more about our own respective stories and our story together.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're gonna end it with Mikel Vega, who was one of our most powerful episodes of 2021.
Thank you guys so much for a great year, and I hope you enjoy this month.
Yes, and happy holidays to all of you, whatever you celebrate. If you're not celebrating anything, just, you know, join us and enjoy the ride, and we'll be back on January 4th with our 12th season.
Enjoy the show. Several times a week, Laura will turn to me after we get into bed and say those six little words I've been waiting to hear all day. Can I read something to you? Once I've said yes, she reaches for an item from her very cluttered nightstand and proceeds to bring that book, blog post, poem, essay, or article to life with her voice. I hope you enjoy listening to her read as much as I do. Here's this week's selection from Laura's nightstand.
So as Scott said, this is On My Nightstand, and I am Laura Cathcart Robbins. And today I'm going to be reading you a piece of mine that was published in the Huffington Post last week. It's actually called HuffPost now. I keep saying the Huffington Post because I'm old school. This was published in HuffPo Personal by my lovely editor, Emily McCombs. And the article is titled, "I'm Regular Sober. Here's How I Feel About Demi Lovato Being California Sober." And I thought today would be a fitting day to read this as it's my birthday. And I definitely credit my birthday, the fact that I have one, to being sober because of the kind of person I was before I got sober. So here we go. In 2008, I popped in to see a friend at a table read. That's where the cast of a play, TV show, or film sits around a table and reads the entire script out loud. And I was invited to sit in until the star of the show arrived. Moments later, an effervescent 16-year-old stunner strode into the conference room, wearing a black leather jacket and biker boots. I didn't know who they were then, but the moment they smiled and said hello, I felt the molecules in the room change. The show was a Disney pilot called Sunny with a Chance. That star was Demi Lovato. 4 months after that table read, I would check myself into drug and alcohol treatment for what I now understand was remarkably progressed alcoholism. I had been drinking and using around the clock and found myself unable to be the mother that my kids deserved. I'd tried everything, just drinking and leaving pills alone, then taking pills without drinking. I tried different drugs, Ativan, Klonopin, Valium. I tried different drinks, beer, wine, vodka. I tried limiting my drinking to certain hours, but that only worked for a day or two. It must be 5 o'clock somewhere, I'd reason. I swore on my children several times that I would only take pills at bedtime, but morning after morning I would find myself drunk or high, wondering how it happened again. As Robin Williams once famously said, I was violating my standards faster than I could lower them. 30 days later, I walked out of that treatment center terrified, humiliated, and sober. I still thought it was unfathomable that I would ever, never again be able to have a glass of champagne at a friend's wedding, or accept a much-needed Xanax from a friend if I was stressed out. But I'd chosen 12-step recovery, though I didn't know there were other types of recovery at the time. And in 12-step recovery, the mandate was unambiguous. You may ingest nothing that alters you from the neck up without changing your sobriety date. For me, that meant no more NyQuil when I had a cold. No occasional leftover Vicodin when I had a killer headache. No more trendy fermented drinks that listed a 0.5% alcohol content. When people ask me if I ever think about loosening up a little and maybe trying a little cannabis for sleep or a glass of wine when we're on vacation, I usually say something like this. I'm not willing to risk my sobriety because I don't know what might awaken that monster that kept me from my kids. 3 years after that table read, a 19-year-old Demi Lovato, who recently came out as non-binary and uses the they-them pronouns, checked into treatment for the first time. There have been several since then. In the following years, I watched with interest as talk show host after talk show host documented their heroin-induced strokes and heart attack, along with their struggles and depression, substance use, self-harm, bullying, and bulimia. Eventually, I felt like it was all too much. Leave that poor child alone, I thought. Let them find their way in peace. But I sat up and took notice in March of this year when Lovato declared themselves something called California sober. I've learned that shutting the door on things makes me want to open the door even more, Lovato said in their docuseries, Demi Lovato Dancing with the Devil. I've learned that it doesn't work for me to say I'm never going to do this again. Instead of practicing total abstinence like in traditional recovery, being California sober usually means a recovering addict uses certain drugs like weed and alcohol in moderation. The complete abstinent method isn't a one-size-fits-all solution for everybody, Demi said during an interview with CBS Sunday Morning that aired in March. This is all coming up again now because of Lala Kent of Vanderpump Rules. She recently was quoted on Behind the Velvet Rope as saying, being California sober is not a real thing. You're not sober. If you're drinking or you're smoking weed, you're not sober. I have to say that I agree with her. I don't have any issues with someone who has struggled with substance or alcohol use disorder, and decided they'd like to smoke weed. Honestly, what anyone chooses to do with their bodies isn't any of my business. I do, however, take issue with labeling that state as being sober, California or otherwise. Moreover, I believe that people for whom recovery does need to be black and white, they might get into trouble while trying to do things the Demi Lovato way. What addict wouldn't fasten on to the idea, with glee, that they can drink and smoke weed like a normal person and still be sober? And how many addicts might die while trying to achieve something that won't ever work for them? An addict who puts down their drug of choice but still uses marijuana may be playing with fire. According to one study, among individuals in alcohol treatment, any cannabis use, compared with none, is related to a significantly lower percentage of days abstinent from alcohol post-treatment. In other words, those people who use cannabis at all were sober for less time. It usually starts off innocently enough. A person in recovery will take a few hits of weed or have a drink or two and think, maybe I'm better now, this isn't so bad after all. In my experience, people who abandon their 12-step recovery to try other methods, such as mindful drinking or moderation management, often come back in worse shape than before. Not only can using another substance lead an addict back to their original substance of choice, there's also the danger of transferring addictions. A girlfriend of mine wanted to try moderating, so she put down her drug habit in her 20s, but found that by age 35 she was basically mainlining booze instead, drinking 2 quarts of vodka a day. For many of us, our addiction issues were less about specific substances than our inherent need to treat our problems with whatever chemical solution happens to be available. But I also want to be mindful that the only sobriety I can judge is my own. I have a woman in my life who, like Lovato, almost died several times of heroin overdoses. But now, just 2 years after her last stint in the neuro ICU, she has an occasional drink or hit of weed without experiencing any negative consequences. But unlike Lovato, she'll be the first one to tell you that she does not consider herself to be sober. And while I ponder the concept of harm reduction, accepting that not everyone is ready or capable of giving up their substance use at a given time, just for a moment, I wonder what it would have been like when I was trying to get sober in 2008 if someone had said, hey, you don't have to give up everything. You can still drink in moderation. I mean, if I could have drunk or used in moderation, I certainly would have. The truth is that for me and others like me, recovery is an all-or-nothing proposition. I'm convinced that I'd be dead if I hadn't gotten quote-unquote regular sober when I did. I'm not mad at Demi Lovato. I knew they were special the moment they walked into that room 13 years ago, and I'm still a fan. I also understand that recovery is not a one-size-fits-all. And besides 12-step recovery, there are many, many pathways to restore yourself, to get well and whole again. I guess I just like to let anyone know who is dealing with an addiction that if, like me, you are not someone who is capable of moderating the amount of drugs in your system at any given time, there is help out there to get quote-unquote regular sober. Total abstinence can sound scary when you become dependent on substances, but I'm proof that there is freedom on the other side. On My Nightstand is a special segment of the Only One in the Room podcast. Today's episode was produced by Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, and executively produced by Christina Barcy, who we call Barcy. Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible, brand new Only One interview, and every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading from something that I love. If you have an Only One in the Room story or a piece of writing that you'd like to share, please submit it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.